Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. It comes as no surprise that San Francisco is an expensive place to raise children. Indeed, parents can spend as much as $2,000 a month per child for childcare, making the city the most expensive in the country for childcare costs. Now, while the federal government suggests that affordable childcare should be no more than 7% of a family's income, in California, these costs can consume 25% or more of people's annual incomes. And nationwide, the cost of childcare has tripled since 1990. So what can be done about these rising costs? Will last year's San Francisco ballot measure, Prop C, do anything to alleviate the problem, at least here in San Francisco? And should the government and employers offer more parental leave? To discuss these issues, I'm joined in the studio by Gina Frommer, CEO of Children's Council of San Francisco, which connects childcare providers and families. Welcome, Gina.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Graham Dobson, Senior Policy Analyst with the San Francisco Office of Early Childhood Education. Welcome, Graham.
Thanks. Welcome.
And we're also joined by Kim Kruckel, Executive Director of the Child Care Law Center. Hello, Kim.
My pleasure. Thanks.
So later in the hour, we'll be joined by Phil Ginsberg, General Manager of the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department, so you can stay tuned for that. And that department oversees a wide variety of camps and after-school programs that offer childcare for kids 5 and older. So we're going to hit the whole range of ages of early childhood education here on this program. We hope you will join us for the conversation. We're going to open the phone lines in about 20 minutes, and you can reach us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And in the meantime, you can email or text us now with any questions at cityvisions@kalw.org. And you can also reach us by tweeting us at cityvisionskalw. We want to hear how access to childcare or the difficulty of accessing childcare has impacted you, your family, or your career. So, Gina, let me start with you. Children's Council acts as a link to parents and childcare providers. So can you give us an overview of the costs and expenses for families that are seeking childcare in San Francisco?
Yes, Ethan, thank you very much. First, I want to say that the Children's Council of San Francisco, we believe that childcare is a basic human right, and that early care and education, if started early, can actually save the city money. Kids can go to school ready, and it just San Francisco will become the child-friendly place that it purports to be. Your question around cost, this $2,000 to $2,500 a month for childcare, you know, infants 0 to 3, their cost is even more expensive. And so we have about 45,000 kids in San Francisco right now between the ages of 0 to 5. And on any given day in our city, there are about 3,000 kids on a waiting list to receive a subsidy so they can find quality childcare. You know, early care and education is important to our city, and they invest a lot of resources and time to ensure that, you know, our children are in quality care. However, it's a supply and demand issue, right? We don't have enough supply, and our demand is great. And so this cost, you know, San Francisco is one of the most expensive places to provide child care for families in the country. And we know that child care matters. So
you say it's a supply and demand problem. Why don't we have more supply if the demand is there?
Exactly. And I think that's a good question. We're going to have some of the panelists talk a little bit more about that. But right now, the city is working to expand their child care network, bring in new providers. And we're a business incubator at the Children's Council. We're looking at this as an entrepreneurial opportunity. But when the rates are so low, you know, people are not seeing it as a career opportunity.
So that's one of the part. That's one of the problems.
Exactly.
The salary isn't
exactly
there for people.
Exactly.
Well, Kim Kruckel, let me ask you to weigh in on this. So if it is a supply and demand problem, as Gina just suggested, then what's your take on why San Francisco is not able to meet this demand?
Well, actually, it is such an expensive city to operate in, and the cost of childcare is directly, it's basically a transfer of income, right? One parent is going to work and basically has to transfer all their salary to somebody else. So the cost of providing it, as well as the cost of paying for it, are just really high. It doesn't work on a regular market economy kind of operation system. So where housing costs are super, super high, how are childcare providers going to be able to charge enough from a family to cover the cost of rent? It's it goes on from there, but that is one way to provide an example.
It seems like the housing shortage is, you know, it creates a sort of spiraling impact because then people can't afford, the child care providers themselves can't afford to live here. It's hard to get space, right? And then meanwhile, people are also squeezed in their own personal budgets, right?
Exactly. I mean, we are creating solutions or starting to create solutions to address that. And some of them, the city has taken the lead on in bringing in new resources. The state government is allocating new grants to facilities to help family child care providers and child care centers expand to serve the population. But it's kind of a slow process because there's been such a long buildup.
And Gina, let me go back to you on a question of what we're talking about here in terms of child care. Are we talking about daycare centers? Are we talking about people running programs out of their apartments? What's the sort of landscape of these businesses?
Yeah, so we're looking at about 1,000 sites across San Francisco. 700 are family child care centers that are home-based. 300 are family child care facilities, which are center-based. And so out of those 1,000, we're serving about 8,000 kids in San Francisco, which is still not enough. And so if we can grow the family daycare in their home network, that's where the most potential is, right? You're already in your home. You have a space. You know, we can help you get it all set up. We can get you, you know, get you on that pathway towards being a career opportunity. And the city has really put a lot of resources in supporting the quality care of these potential providers.
And some kids obviously are cared for by stay-at-home parents, grandparents, et cetera, but a lot of people get nannies. What percentage of people are getting nannies, you know, sort of the home-based child care versus sending their child out to a facility?
Well, I'm going to give you an example. So $147,000 a year for a family of three with two small children, that's what you have to make to get your basic needs met, and 30% of that is going for child care. How can you afford a nanny? So you're looking at higher-income families with that ability, not families that come from the lowest income to the middle. There's no nanny support. You're talking about grandmas and aunties and uncles, that extended family. But think about it. In San Francisco, a lot of our extended families are gone because of housing costs, because of illness. Grandma can't watch the kids anymore because she's sick, mm-hmm. right? So all these things come into play around how children are being cared for in our city.
And even a nanny share, if you go in with a few families, I mean, is that, you know, expense-wise, how does that compare to going through an established program?
I think it's more personalized. I think families want it because it's more personalized. The kids are at home. There's one person. The kids are not in a bigger setting. But then, you know, what about socialization and, you know, and all those other things? And so if you have that kind of a choice, I think families will choose nannies and nanny shares. But if you don't have that choice, the city is providing a quality network that we can get our young children involved and engaged in.
And Graham, let me bring you in on this conversation. So we talked about some of the challenges here that people face living in the city in terms of finding locations to have child care facilities, being able to afford to live here. What exactly is the city doing about all of this, and is there more the city could be doing?
Well, San Francisco is very unique in California. We actually have an office, a city office of early care and education that looks at all things 0 to 5. So, and we're very lucky because we also have local resources that come to our office to be able to put back into the field for early care and education. So that's not most of the cities, most of the counties in California don't have that. So first and foremost, I think the city has already taken that, made that stance that, you know, early care and education is important. We are, you know, we work with a network of qualified centers and family child care educators who meet certain levels of quality assurances that we then will help support with providing additional enhanced funding for the children that they're serving. So, for example, some programs may be getting children whose families are getting subsidies from the state, but those subsidies that they get, the reimbursement rates that they get every day, don't cover the cost of actually providing those services. So the city will then pay an additional amount on top of each of those state or federal subsidies to bring it up to what the cost of providing quality early care and education in San Francisco, more like the market rate. So that's one way that we're trying to incentivize programs who may not take, you know, low to moderate income families to accept children who are coming with subsidies or coming with vouchers. We have money in the city to help support facility development. So we have development impact fees that come to the city and we put it back out into the community through grants that will help build new facilities, new programs, new centers. There's a lot of development going on in San Francisco right now. We have a pipeline, I would say, of about 30 new childcare centers that are looking to be built over the next 10 years that are part of these new developments coming in. And we work directly with those operators to provide funding to support the build-out of those programs and acquisition of buildings, too. And with family childcare, you know, we have a quality network, and we'd like to expand that to get as many infants and toddlers. We know that there's a huge unmet need for infants and 0 to 3-year-olds in particular. And I think that's an area that we really want to focus on in the future.
Well, I'm glad you pointed out that this is an unusual office for the city to create, the Office of Early Childhood Education. How unique are you? I mean, were there any analogs you could look to for, you know, role models in terms of setting up this office? And what's a little bit of the history of this office, too?
Well, the office, you know, there was city funding that was supporting 0 to 5-year-olds that was held at different city departments at one time. So Human Services Agency, First Five San Francisco, and Department of Children, Youth, and Families all had funding sources that went towards serving 0 to 5-year-olds. And so under Mayor Ed Lee's mayorship, he created this office to bring all the city resources that were available for 0 to 5 under one umbrella so that we could be our own entity and really focus directly on what was best for 0 to 5-year-olds. So it is pretty unique. I'm sure there are other cities out there that have something similar, but in California, I don't know of another one in another city in California that has an office that's very specific to 0 to 5-year-olds.
So it sounds like a lot of what your office does is direct money into these different centers.
Not right? Just that. We subsidies for families, support for the operators, for the child care centers and the family child care educators to enhance their, you know, so to support their operations. We also do a lot of support services, such as health screenings. We fund health screenings, Department of Public Health nurses to go into centers. We do mental health consultation, inclusion work for children with special needs. We do quality assessments and support coaching to the teachers that are in the programs. So there's a lot of wraparound. It's not just access and affordability, but we believe that early childhood education has to be quality to be of a lasting benefit and to get children ready to go into school. And so that starts at birth. And so we have a lot of wraparound services that really support all of the programs that are working with the children that we help fund for all those additional family support and child support services that they need.
And you mentioned that some of these centers are 10 years out. That seems like a long time for people to wait.
Right? Yeah, I mean, but it's ongoing. We've had centers being built over the last 10 years as well. So it's just an ongoing pipeline of new developments. I think we're pretty unique in that we have the support in the city to help fund new facilities. And we have a lot of development going on right now. And a lot of city-partnered projects are including childcare right from the offset, and see it as a public benefit, see it as a public good, as a social justice issue, and that this is something that our community needs to keep the families here and to get the children ready for kindergarten.
And I have to note, it seems like there's an irony in putting fees on new development to make development more expensive when part of what the problem here is that we don't have enough development, right, to create the homes and the businesses to provide child care centers and lower cost of housing for people.
Well, all the fees that are charged to developments that are going on in the city, they help, you know, there's infrastructure that is a result of any of the new buildings that you see go up anywhere in the city. And that might be like the streets, parks and, you know, Rec and Parks, public works, all of the things that go along with new buildings. Your transport is huge. And the city sees child care as being an integral part of that infrastructure and is as important as transport and parks. And, you know, if you're going to bring new families in, you're going to build new buildings and people are going to move in here, you need childcare for those families.
And so, Kim, let me follow up with you about some of these points about people getting kicked out and, you know, losing their home care businesses and their homes at the same time. And, you know, how does that play into it, particularly in this point that, you know, as we make put more fees on new development, we're going to make it harder to build the exact facilities that we need.
Well, starting with the development, I think it's really important for all of us in our community to chip in to help our community thrive. And when companies come in and create all kinds of great and exciting new jobs and all kinds of great and exciting new businesses, they're bringing people here to work in those. And once people start working and have families, they need a place to have their kids. So I really want to cast this as something that companies and businesses can do to help our whole collective community thrive and support families. And that, you know, that's a little bit on the development side related to businesses and corporations, and those fees are restricted to financial centers downtown. It's not like
not a new housing, right. For example.
too, as well as businesses. But you know, regarding the largest supply of care for our little babies and toddlers is in family child care homes. They are licensed, they are highly regulated by the state, and they're nestled all throughout our communities, not only in San Francisco, but all throughout the Bay Area and the peninsula. And lots of families have developed really warm, nurturing relationships with these family child care providers, many of whom are newcomers to this country, people who are getting their foot in the door here, entrepreneurial, and providing this really rich cultural experiences for kids. Now, when property owners decide that higher rent could be achieved with a different kind of occupant in the home, or when apartment owners in multifamily structures decide, you know, better rents can be obtained with different tenants, and they, you know, push out or harass or discriminate or raise the rent, they're not only depriving the community of a really great source of family child care so parents can work, but of course also depriving people of their home. So, you know, this is something that I think we are trying to address at the statewide level, but San Francisco has actually tried to initiate some local laws to set aside, these haven't been done yet, but to actually set aside apartments for family child care providers. But a lot of that's rooted in our very long, well-known history with a shortage of housing.
Mm-hmm. All right, so those issues are definitely very intertwined. And Gina, let me go back to a point you made earlier about the low wages for these workers. And there was a study cited by CalMatters recently that noted that some employees at McDonald's get paid more than preschool teachers. Nothing against people who work at McDonald's, but it seems like we really want to make sure we're investing a lot of resources in early childhood educators. And another study from the Economic Policy Institute at Berkeley looked at poverty rates for full-time workers and found that 7.9% of them live below the poverty line. Why are they paid so little in comparison to, you know, K-12 counterparts, and what can be done about it?
I think that's the question, and I think our governor is aware of this, and they're trying to do some things at the state level. San Francisco is super innovative around these type of issues, and the mayor is looking at these issues right now, from stipends to long-term solutions for our providers. And the reality is we're never going to meet the demand if we do not, you know, begin to open up the doors for new people to come in and say, hey, this is a career opportunity. I want to do this. This is exciting. I've been doing it for years. Now I want to convert into a licensed childcare center. And so it's something that we can't answer yet. It's something that we know is wrong and we have to correct it. And everybody at the table is looking at this now. And I think this is the new millennium right now, where we're all looking at this as an issue.
And is there something going on here culturally, you know, that we just don't value this time? I mean, is this developmentally, this is among the most critical years of a child's life. Is that what's going on, or are there other factors?
I mean, you know, I just want to be real here that, you know, some people have the old traditional way of thinking, you know, 0 to 3, they should be home with mom. I mean, really. And if someone said that to me directly, I'm like, are you kidding me? What about these aspirations of individuals who want to get out and go to school and go back to work? We should provide this. It's good for our city. It's good for the economy. Every dollar we spend upstream working with this early care and education means the public dollars save $17. So it's an economy issue, right? We can do better as an economy. And that $17 should be invested in our providers.
Mm-hmm. And Graham, did you want to weigh in on this issue of the low wages?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that we're seeing has become somewhat of a crisis here in San Francisco around workforce compensation for early education teachers. They're just chronically undervalued and underpaid. And I think the city, with additional resources that we hope to see come in, I think the biggest priority will be helping to, because without teachers, then you don't have the supply. And we need to keep teachers in the city. We need to keep teachers working. We need them not to be reliant on benefits themselves because they're under a certain income level. So the city will be addressing that. We're looking at teacher stipends to help bring, on an annual basis and as a short-term fix. But ideally, the wages themselves, the compensation themselves, would eventually be at parity with K-12.
All right, and there's also an issue for K-12 teachers, too, as well, that we're, in terms of underpaying those who are educating our children. So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco. We're also streaming live on the web at kalw.org. Our guests tonight are Graham Dobson, senior analyst with the San Francisco Department of Early Childhood Education, Gina Frommer, CEO of Children's Council San Francisco, and Kim Kruckel, Executive Director of the Child Care Law Center. And in a few minutes, we'll be joined by phone by Phil Ginsberg, the General Manager of the San Francisco Recreation and Park Center. But we want to open the phone lines up now and hear from all of you. The number to call to join the conversation, ask questions of these panelists, and share your experiences is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And you can also reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. We want to hear from you. Has child care impacted your family? And if so, how? Do you have suggestions for families looking for child care? And what kinds of programs do you think would help alleviate the problem of cost and access? The number again is 866-798-TALK. So, Gina, for many low-income families, it is particularly challenging. And you referenced this a few minutes back about the high cost of childcare and how that affects those who just don't have a lot of options financially. So there's a variety of subsidies that people can qualify for. But can you kind of talk through a little bit of what those programs might be and how someone with a lower income is able to make this work?
Well, if you're in San Francisco and you're, the state subsidy level is about $65,000 to get a subsidy. And so if you're under that bracket, you will be able to get a subsidy. Now, the waiting list is another issue, but we can get you qualified for a subsidy. Beyond that, you go into the city supporting a bridge program that if you're a little bit over income there, you still get support. And then there's a max for that. So, we're encouraging, if you think about the whole child care system and families, I was a mom and I wanted to go back to school. I had three sons at the time. They were 5, 3, and 1, and I wanted to go back to school and I needed care. I didn't know where to go, so I walked into the Children's Council, who had a resource and referral network. I was able to find a place near my home and a woman that was doing it for years, and she was lovely. These women are lovely. They don't even do it for the money. They do it because they care about community. Most of these providers are anchors in their community because everybody knows them, right? And my kids went there until they were able to get in the kindergarten ready. And so, the lower income families, they might be able to qualify, but look at the challenges they have in front. They got to go back to work. They got to go back to school. There's transportation. There's housing. They're getting hit from every level. And the aspirational and desire for them to want to be better and get out of poverty is what's going to drive them, to the next level.
And Kim, let me ask you the same question about navigating these complex systems and how low-income families can pull this off.
Well, the first thing a family should do if they need help paying for childcare is call the Children's Council.
Yes.
Or call Wu Yi Children's Services. We do have an income ceiling. It is about $65,000. There's going to be a great new program in San Francisco someday when the litigation stops, when families earning up to about 200% of our area median income will actually be able to get help with financial assistance to pay for child care.
But and you're referring to Prop C.
I am.
The other Prop C, not the one about homelessness, but
right.
The June.
We call it baby Prop C.
Okay. Little C.
Yeah. But basically, we don't really want families to have to worry about navigating the system, to tell you the truth. We really just want people to call us, and we will help get them in the door. The bottom line right now is that there is a cap on the amount of money that you can earn, but we're all working really hard to make that cap higher and higher to reach the level that families really need assistance at in such an expensive city.
All right. Well, let me go to the phone lines here. We have Maria right here in San Francisco calling in from an organization called Parent Voices. So, Maria, welcome to City Visions.
Thank you for taking my call. And thank you for all your panelists. They just hit a lot of the issues that parents are facing. My question is, and this is often pushed at the back of the burner, the voice of the parents are often not heard when it comes to matching the needs of working families, especially those who work the swing shift, who work in the service industry. Licensed care is not available during those hours. So I want to know how we are trying to address that issue of supply. And then on the other hand, also parent choice. Does it match the needs of families? Like, is it near their workplace? Is it close transportation? And then I think my other point is, in the city this year, we are hoping to have more funding for childcare, but even if we have enough money to pay for, to send all our children on the waiting list, we may not have enough supply. So I hope that the people who are making decisions are addressing this, and I want to know what the panelists think of that.
Great. Thank you, Maria, for that question. Graham, let me start with you, response for Maria with those points she made.
The first one I would address would be the supply. I mean, I think, you know, we really are trying to extend our network of qualified centers and family child care educators that are funded through the city. And so over the next, 6 to 9 months, we're going to be looking at that and how we can bring new operators on board to increase that supply. The conversation that we had earlier around facility development and new facilities and trying to build more spaces, then I think that also is something we definitely see supply being an issue, especially for infants and toddlers. We know that there's a huge unmet need there.
Well, I would just add that
Kim,
every single family is different and has different needs, both for themselves, their work schedules, and for their children. And we also support, with subsidies, parents can choose what we call family, friend, or neighbor care, which is often much more flexible. And is certainly open is a very important part of families, especially those working odd schedules, trying to go back to school, et cetera.
Right. The non-traditional hours are something that I think that we haven't really focused on from the city perspective as much. I think the state subsidies and that are more portable and those can be used anywhere or can be used there. We would like to work more closely with our family, friend, and neighbor network. I think that is something that the city and our office will be looking at in the future.
And Gina, did you want to respond to Maria?
You know, we're beginning at the Children's Council to look at the non-traditional day and look at the outside of those hours. We just had a meeting today with someone at an organization that we're trying to think through this together. The other thing is about choice and parents. You know, Child Care Finder 2.0 is something that we offer at the Children's Council. Families can go on and look at the different providers. They can see their ratings. They're providing Healthy Apple program or the food nutrition program. We're encouraging families to do their research. And these things are available on your phone or on the internet, or just walk in the Children's Council doors. We have R&R specialists that are there that can help you. And we're looking also at expanding our services to, you know, sort of a 24-hour hotline. We're looking for funding right now to do that because a lot of people get off work and they're not in the traditional work hours. And we're closed. And so we're looking at a lot of different ways to support families and empower them to be the child's primary teacher, which they are.
All right. Well, that's a lot of great responses from Maria. So thank you for calling in with that. And on this point of how to access high-quality child care, all of you have mentioned some resources. So Children's Council, obviously, Wu Yi was mentioned. Other resources you can suggest for families looking for high-quality child care?
In the city, those are the two places that you go to.
How about websites like sffamilies.org? They're listservs for parents. So, Kim, I don't know.
That's a government website. I think there's a few parenting websites as well.
Our website, OECE.org, sfoece.org.
And where exactly, Gina, is Children's Council located for people want to actually come to the office?
Right. It's 445 Church Street. It's right on the J Line. Very convenient. Beautiful weather in the mission, and we would love to see you. Come on down.
And you can bring your child, I assume.
Bring everybody. Grandma,
right.
too.
All right. Well, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org, where we're streaming live. Our guest tonight are Graham Dobson, Senior Analyst with the San Francisco Department on Early Childhood Education, Gina Frommer, CEO of Children's Council San Francisco, and Kim Kruckel, Executive Director of the Child Care Law Center. We invite you to call in with questions or comments. We want to hear how your search for childcare has impacted your family and hear your childcare stories here in San Francisco or in neighboring Bay Area cities. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Easier way to remember it. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org. You can post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or on our Facebook page. You can also reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. Well, we have a special guest joining in by phone now. Phil Ginsberg is a general manager of the SF Recreation and Park Center. So, Phil, welcome to City Visions. We're glad to have you on. We've been talking a lot about early childhood education, but what is the what are the Recreation and Park Centers offering in terms of child care?
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm sorry I joined the conversation late, and hi, everybody. It's a really important conversation, so thanks for having it. The San Francisco Recreation and Park Department might actually be the largest provider of child care services in San Francisco, for kids ranging from tots to transitional age youth. So I will just jump right in on with respect to tot programs. This summer, we've got half-day camps at four different locations around the city, 7 weeks at each location, and we're serving over 400 tots. As kids get older, really our bread and butter during the summer anyway is our summer camp program, where we offer about 450 weeks of camp with 20,000 program slots for kids age 6 through 13, literally on 95% of the parks and clubhouses and recreation facilities that we steward. And then during the school year, we run after-school enrichment programs at 14 different sites around the city with about 25 to 50 kids each site. And then a bunch of drop-in programs, which are really, I was going to say affordable, but everybody has access to our programs regardless of ability to pay. And some really cool specialty programs. So, we're not the only piece of the puzzle, and we work very closely with a number of nonprofit and community providers, but I think we're in an important part of the web of child care delivery.
And we've got an email question in from a listener asks if there's any financial assistance for attending these camps.
Yes. I mean, some of our programs are actually free or drop-in, but our camps and all of our programs include a very robust scholarship program that is tied to the San Francisco Unified School District's free and reduced lunch program. So the subsidies are actually identical. And last year we offered $1.2 million worth of subsidies to our kids and families for summer camps and programs. This summer, I believe we have approximately 1,500 kids on some form of summer camp scholarship. And then, we do that year-round.
And Phil, how do people access these programs?
SFRecPark.org can kind of steer you in the right direction. Or, we have forgotten about this tool as a city, but 311 is the very easiest way to do it. And 311, if you can't figure out how to navigate our website, or you could come to McLaren Lodge if you're in the neighborhood, which is right at the tip of Golden Gate Park. But 311, and we can connect you. When we do our program registrations, we do them online, but we also do them at all of our major rec centers all around the city.
And Phil, I have to ask you.
And in multiple languages.
All right. That's good to know. So for those listening, that's how you would access these programs. And I have to ask you, that the beginning of the summer, there was a back and forth in the San Francisco Chronicle about how hard it can be to find a summer camp spot for kids. Would you like to comment on that, about this crush to get these spots?
I totally reject that premise out of hand. Again, you know, 450 weeks of camp. Now, not everyone can find their, you know, most favorite camp on exactly the week that they want it. You know, it's a little bit like, I think when I responded to that article, like if you want to see Hamilton, you may not be able to get tickets on a Friday, but you may be able to get tickets on a Tuesday, and there's all kinds of other amazing theater going on throughout the city. So a little bit of data about this summer is that we still have slots open for kids all around the city. And again, over 450 camps offered. You know, we do have a pretty robust registration system where for the most popular camps, you're going to compete with other San Franciscans that might want them. But I think, you know, a little bit like sometimes the conversation with SF Unified Elementary School. You know, I'm raising two kids and they're a little older now, but when we entered the public school system, the myth was that there were only, you know, five good elementary schools, when in fact there might be 35. And I think that the same is true with our summer camp programs. There's stuff in every neighborhood, regardless of your interest. So while certain programs can be competitive in terms of registration, there's something for everyone.
Well, and so it's good to know that there's a lot of programs out there. But, you know, Hamilton, when it got popular, they went on the road. You know, are there any plans for these particularly popular camps to expand them so there's not so much demand for so few spots?
I mean, I think we're already doing that, and people just have to be willing to try it. I mean, we're offering, during the summer, we're offering classes and camps at 95% of our property. And, you know, one thing that's great about San Francisco is we're the first city in the United States where 100% of us live within a 10-minute walk of a park. That means there's something for almost everyone within a 10-minute walk. And, again, there are specialty camps, and if you want, you know, your kid to have archery camp in Golden Gate Park or rock climbing camp or, you know, some of the real popular ones over time have been Silver Tree and Pine Lake and some of our skateboarding camps. You know, you may or may not be lucky enough to get it on the precise week that you want it. But it's also important to know that we offer camps, week-long camps, all summer long. So you might be able to find that camp on a different week, or you might try a different camp. And so I think my advice to parents with our summer camp registration program is be open to trying new things. There are some really exciting camps devoted to sports, visual and performing arts, nature and urban exploration. We have actually a camp that teaches kids how to navigate the city on $5 a day. We have camps in American Sign Language. So, you know, there's
a lot of offers, it sounds
like. Activities.
So yep, you go to the website for all those listings. And just quickly, how does the cost of SF Park and Rec camp compare to private camp programs?
We're significantly cheaper, significantly more affordable, and it's almost you know, a little bit of an irrelevant conversation because, you know, we meet people where they're at. And if even our camp costs are too much for a family, then we make available scholarships at different levels of subsidy. And then the other thing that I'm really proud about is we do early, at most of our camps, we do early pickup and early drop off and late pickup for working families. So, you know, it really is a great program. It's something that we're all very proud of. You know, we obviously operate year round, but, you know, summer is, you know, when we are at our, you know,
your busiest, right?
Our busiest and actually most inspired.
Yeah.
Most of our camps are between, by the way, $150 and $300 a week for families that wouldn't qualify for a scholarship. But for families that can't afford that, again, we meet them where we're at. After school, we have after school programs for $5 a day. You know, and getting back to this piece about, oh, I didn't get my kid in. This summer so far, even for kids who are on the waiting list, we booked over 700 kids for camps that were on the waiting list. So what happens is you know, families get really excited in March when we have our summer camp sign up, and they sign up for a whole bunch of camps, and then their plans kind of become a little bit clearer, and, you know, people do different things and drop off. And so we try to really hard to be there for San Francisco families, and not just during the summer, but year round.
All right. Well, good for listeners to know and for families to know about the options that are taxpayer supported. And so there are a lot of camps to check out. It sounds like don't just go for those Hamilton camps. Go for the camps that maybe don't have the hype of Hamilton, but still might be worthwhile.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Hamilton is awesome. I mean, who doesn't love Hamilton?
Well, I haven't seen it, so don't tell me how it ends. All right, well, so that's the message, and hopefully people will go on the website and check out some of the different offerings there. This is
great.
City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org, where we're streaming live. Our guests tonight are Graham Dobson, Senior Analyst with the San Francisco Department on Early Childhood Education, Gina Frommer, CEO of Children's Council San Francisco, Kim Kruckel, Executive Director of the Child Care Law Center, and you just heard joining by phone just now is Phil Ginsberg, the General Manager of the San Francisco Recreation and Park Center. We invite you to call in with questions or comments about how child care has impacted your family or suggestions you have for families who are looking for child care. The number to call to join the conversation, ask questions of these panelists is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or on our Facebook page. And you can also reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. Kim Kruckel, let me go back to you to a point you raised earlier about Prop C and funding in general. So you described Prop C as a sort of baby Prop C. Can you describe a little bit about that measure, where it is right now, and what it would do if it could be in effect?
Baby Prop C was initiated by San Francisco voters back in the spring of 2018. They gathered about 15,000, 16,000 signatures to put it on the ballot. It passed. What the proposition is a small surcharge tax on commercial rents over $1 million a year. The funding raised from that slight additional tax goes to fund early childhood education for basically every single family in San Francisco, earning up to 200% of our area median income. So this is a really important, significant, groundbreaking, first of its kind, voter-inspired initiative in our, not only in San Francisco, but also in California. There have been a lot of voter initiatives to fund programs for kids, but they've never been targeted directly at early childhood education programs. So it's really a wonderful breakthrough for us. The funds would specifically target increasing the supply and quality of childcare by offering training opportunities and support services for our early childhood educators in our town. And increase the compensation that they get in exchange for caring for our kids. It also focuses on health and safety for babies and toddlers. Overall, it's just a really amazing opportunity for us to get to where we want to be, the vision where kids and families are thriving in our city. Now, unfortunately, some people don't want to honor the fact that the voters passed this initiative and challenged it in court. They were not successful on the first round. The judge upheld it as a valid initiative, but it is still under, you know, working its way through the legal system. It might be appealed again.
Is this the same issue where it didn't get 2/3 majority that the other Prop C is held up on?
No, that was not. That was not the issue. The issue was whether or not it had truly been initiated by the voters gathering signatures. If you gather signatures to put on the ballot, you only need 50% plus one. So it wasn't whether or not it had 2/3. It was just whether or not it had been truly initiated by voters.
All right. And Gina, let me ask you about Prop C and just kind of funding in general. I mean, first of all, do you think Prop C is a good model that other cities and and states should consider using? Are you looking forward to this hopefully coming into effect, and will it make a difference?
Yeah, I am. I feel like it's the left hand to the right, and that now we're whole if this goes through, because there are a lot of families that the reason I think it passed, so many families are in need of this service. The cost of living in San Francisco is so high that even at 200%, you're probably just barely making it. If you have three kids, each kid that you have to put in childcare is going to have a cost related to it. So this is sort of funding the middle, I'm going to call it. And the middle, we want families to stay in San Francisco. We want them to come to San Francisco and have a choice to
Amen.
Be here. You know, this is a family-friendly city. And if we do not continue to expand the landscape, you know, of our child care network in our system, we're not going to have the families we deserve. And people, you know, we can't go to San Francisco. We want them to come here.
And you mentioned earlier that the governor, Governor Newsom, has made family and child care issues a cornerstone of his budget, and that San Francisco budget obviously is directing some resources here. What's kind of coming down the pike from the state, from the city, that you're looking to in terms of resources?
I'm just excited that in his, you know, his beginning of his first year, he's saying, this is my first year. I'm looking at these things. Next year, we're going to look at more things. This whole train is beginning to move. And I'm just excited that it is in the public eye now. Prop C is in San Francisco in the public eye. The governor is going to be supporting it. I think this can really mean some change for our providers. They deserve a living wage. We need this now.
And Graham, let me ask you the same question about resources, the budget from the state, city. Yeah.
I think we're really at the cusp of things changing for the early care and education statewide and locally. I think San Francisco's been a leader in the field, and has been a city that other counties and cities have looked to in California. I think the governor has seen that. He came from San Francisco. He's worked with the advocates here in San Francisco around how important child care is. He's taken that vision. He's made that one of the benchmarks of one of his first budget. We're seeing things that we haven't seen for many, many years at the state level. And I think, you know, likewise here in San Francisco, with the, you know, ballot measures that have been passed by local voters, we see that it's evidence that San Francisco residents really care and want to invest in what's best for the children, especially at the very youngest age.
And Phil, there on the phone, Phil Ginsberg from SF Recreation and Parks Center, what budget changes or, you know, more robust spending are you looking to that could help bolster what you're offering?
Well, we're always working creatively to invest in children and families. I'm particularly excited that this year Mayor Breed invested an additional $2 million on our recreation program side of the house for additional outreach and scholarship opportunities to low-income communities and public housing communities. We've been working very hard with the City Human Services Agency to identify our families most in need and to try to connect them to programs and services. And I think we've got a model that's working, and Mayor Breed's investment is going to allow us to scale it a little bit by actually going to our public housing sites and some of our low-income housing sites and bringing recreation to those facilities as sort of a gateway to get kids and families more involved in more traditional site-based rec and park programs. So we're super excited about that. And then just a plug for those families listening that are already thinking about the fall. Our fall registration is actually begins this Saturday at 10 a.m. And again, that can happen online or at any one of our major rec centers. And there are over 1,200 programs that we're offering this fall all over town. And it also includes Thanksgiving break and winter break camps, which
all
you
right.
can register for as
so
well.
So start making your plans now all the way out to Thanksgiving and winter break. And let's go back to the phone lines. We have Maria dialing in. Not the same Maria, we believe, who dialed in earlier. But Maria, welcome to City Visions.
We have Maria dialing.
Let's see. Maria, we're having trouble hearing you. Are you?
Hi.
Yeah, hi. Welcome to City Visions.
Hi, my name is Maria Antonieta.
All right, great. Welcome to City Visions. You have questions for the panelists?
Can you hear me better?
Yeah, you might want to turn down your radio.
Let me turn it down.
Yeah. All right.
I don't have a question, but I just want to share a little bit about how important was childcare for me when I was on the research, on the search for childcare, because with the childcare, I was able to move my family from being homeless to have a stable housing and also being able to finish my higher education at San Francisco City College. So I really just want to urge us to continue supporting childcare policies, because myself, I work for that campaign for Prop C, and it is something that I still advocate for, because it is very, very important. My family at this moment is in another level, because I keep on working, you know, and I'm able to earn my degree. My kid is in a very good and safe environment, and he's learning. He's so smart. I have a 3-year-old boy. And so I really urge us to continue supporting these policies, because childcare, it is.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Very, very important.
Thank you, Maria, for sharing that story. Well, I think you really make it personal how critical this is to really lift people out of poverty, in addition to providing children with a good environment to learn. Graham, do you want to respond to Maria's story there?
That's exactly why we're doing what we're doing. And, the city, some of the subsidies that the cities provide specifically support homeless families and children whose families are experiencing homelessness. And so I think that's one of our top priorities in providing subsidies and financial support for those families, so their children go to childcare and early education, and those parents, those families can access work, can look for housing, can go to school.
All right. And Gina, do you have thoughts
and
response,
Maria? Just the fact that you are able to have this upward mobility and not fear losing the subsidy, and that you are able to keep going forward. That's what it's really all about. And what I want to say is what we do today is going to impact our tomorrow. So thank you for your story.
Yeah, thank you, Maria, for dialing in and sharing that. And we have a comment from a listener who writes on our website. This is Oscar Tang, who notes that it's a common argument that people ask, why is it the state's responsibility to take care of people's children when they're at work, and that people still believe childcare is not really education. So Oscar asks, what's San Francisco doing to help the public see it a different perspective? Graham, do you want to comment on how you change that sort of the cultural view of early childhood education?
We have to be more visible. We have to professionalize the field. We have to support the teachers and recognize them as the professionals that they are, with well educated and doing doing amazing work. We have to. I think we need to do more around public relations and get our communications out there, so that people really understand how important the first 5 years of life are, educationally and socially, and what it means for children and families. I think we could do more on that.
Mm-hmm. But Oscar, I want to thank you so much for calling in, because one of the things Graham and I were talking about on the way over was a term that we've been using, initiated by one of our astounding leaders from San Francisco who has passed away, and that term is family child care educators. I know everybody who's listening has heard that children are learning the fastest and the most from the minute they're born until they're three. Their brain is developing at an incredibly rapid speed, and the family child care educators who are nurturing and enriching them every day really are. That is how they're learning. And I just want to thank Oscar for bringing up that point, and we can use the term family child care educators.
Yeah, that might be one way to help get at some of the misconceptions around or devaluing of the field. Well, Kim, just staying
and
with
you. I could offer just a quick.
Sure, Phil. Yeah, please go ahead.
A couple of anecdotes to the link between education, childcare, and recreation. And one, which Graham knows about, is a great partnership that we have with the Office of Early Care and Education, in which we're working with childcare providers all around the city, some of whom are landlocked in lower income neighborhoods with no immediate access to nature. To bring natural material, nature-based play to these child care sites, because all of the data, concludes the kids with access to nature are healthier. It's an antidote to trauma. It sparks creativity. So just one little link between what we do and the conversation. And the other anecdote I think is worth mentioning is we run a program called the TLC, our Tennis Learning Center, where at four different sites in underserved, equity-focused communities, we are partnering with SFUSD local elementary schools at our sites. We welcome 25 kids from those elementary schools, K through 5, to the sites, and we work with them. The program is a mix of basic tennis instruction and after-school support, and we're doing a lot of data measurement, and the kids who are in this program show a 30% reduction in absenteeism from school year over year.
All right, so that's good data, good track record there to show. You get these kids outside off their phones, right, and interacting with each other in nature. I want to bring up one topic we haven't mentioned so much, and that's the sort of the career gender issues that childcare presents. And, you know, given the high cost of childcare, you know, it seems that some parents ultimately decide that it's less expensive for a parent to stay home versus going to work. And are the careers of mothers or fathers, you know, between those genders, are they, who's more impacted by that decision as that sets in? So, Gina, let me start with you on that question.
I mean, traditionally, it's a woman's problem. You know, you worry about it. You stay home, I go work. And that's been our history. But now women are taking a stand. We're standing out front. We're leaders. We're politicians. We're CEOs. We want our place at the table, too. And so that means our children have to be in a safe, sound, quality environment. Because if you're in a nurture business, that's what this is all about, nurturing your children. And, you know, I think we need to get away from that quickly, that it's just a woman's problem. And so I think San Francisco is always leading. We're a world-class city. We should have a world-class child care network that's supporting women who want to get out and do things. And their aspirations and dreams are not put on hold until that child gets to be 5 years old, okay, like my mother had to do. Mm-hmm. No.
It also seems like a lot of the early childhood educators are also women themselves. So what about the role for men to take on more of these roles? Graham, do you want to
I was a preschool teacher for many years. I worked in the Tenderloin at a childcare center as a teacher and then a director. You're right. I mean, I think at that time, there were probably more male teachers and men in the field than there are now. I believe that because of the rising cost of living in San Francisco, the compensation, you're seeing less and less men being drawn to the field. We have to turn that around, and I think that's where the compensation issue comes in. And if as a city we can address that, and we can bring those salaries up, and we can bring everybody to equal, you know, level the playing field, so that those wages are you know, everybody and anybody would be happy to be you know, to be getting those wages as a ECE teacher, then that's what we want to do. We want it to be open to. We want more. Definitely, we need the. But better balance, and hopefully we can address that with the higher compensation.
Well, we've only got a minute left, so I want to let each of you just weigh in real quick about you know, what you see as next steps that we should be taking. So, Kim, let me just
Follow up that last comment and end with, I think it's great that our state governor is leading the charge on some of these gender issues. I mean, this is a leader from the top who's saying, I'm sharing this responsibility, and I'm going to make sure that the whole child care and family systems are supported. If you need resources about child care law, you can go to childcarelaw.org.
All right.
Thank you.
And Gina, final comment?
Yes, childrenscouncil.com, police.org. Come on by, learn more about what we do. We're not just a resource and referral. We have a lending library for providers. We have a play lab. We're doing educator classes. We do a whole lot of wonderful, fun things for families and providers to learn more about this city.
All right. And Graham, final comment?
You know, San Francisco is taking the lead in this statewide and actually nationwide. And we want to continue doing the good work. We want to get more resources out there. We want to serve more children, more infants, more toddlers, higher wages, more access for all San Francisco families.
Yes. All right. And Phil, real quick.
Yeah, I'd echo Graham. I mean, I think San Francisco is doing a ton, and I think that you asked what we can do better, and I think what we can do better is to get the word out at the integrated services from both the city and from all of our nonprofit communities.
All right, we're going
to
have
people understand.
So we got to get the word out. We have to leave it there, unfortunately. But that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Graham Dobson from the San Francisco Department on Early Childhood Education. Thank you, Graham.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Gina Frommer from the Children's Council. Thank you. And Kim Kruckle from the Child Care Law Center.
Thank you.
And Phil Ginsberg, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for joining this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows to let us know what you thought about tonight's program and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer tonight was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Grace Wan. Join us next week. We're going to be doing a rebroadcast. And this is Ethan Elkind. Thanks so much for listening. Good night and have a great rest of your week.